G'day everybody, welcome back to the Birder's Guide for another fortnight. How are we all going? Been a good week, well, a good fortnight, in fact. Weather's been nice, although today's 31 degrees, that's a bit too warm for me, but the warm weather is on the way out, fingers crossed. So in terms of birding for myself this week, only one day. I had a tour, I cannot remember what day it is, but less than a week ago, had a tour with a lady from Cairns, which was really good. We spent some time up around Brookfield and sort of everywhere between Adelaide and there. Pretty productive. Got hold of probably the most confiding chestnut quail thrush I've ever seen. They were completely unfazed by our presence. So that was cool. Also got on to her other targets, which were red throat and chestnut crowned babbler, and then just the usual suspects. It was actually pretty good. Brookfield can be one of those places which is a bit hit and miss. Generally speaking, if you know where you're looking, you can find most species, but no guarantees, as is with every bird, everywhere, every time. No guarantees. But anyway, so that's basically all the birding that I've done this week. I'm in the process of planning quite a big expedition with a mate. Well, I'll call him a mate. We've only met once, David, if you're listening. But we'll be mates soon enough, so we may as well just jump to that point. So that sort of takes up most of my brain space, planning that and dreaming and hoping of all the things we'll be able to find. So, apart from that, not really much. Oh, I was going to say, Paul emailed me, and I just want to apologize to Paul, because I think he emailed me about 2 weeks ago, and I haven't replied. I have seen it. I always think about it when I'm lying in bed at night, thinking, oh, hell, I got to reply to that. And then I remember the next night when I'm lying in bed. So, apologies, Paul. I haven't forgotten. I will reply. Thank you for emailing. Thank you for reaching out. Appreciate it. But if anybody does have any thoughts on who I could, should interview or have on the show, let me know. I've got maybe four or five people in the works that other people have suggested. Just working on making that a reality. But these things take time. That's fine. Now, in terms of what's been seen around Australia, there has been... Now, I don't know whether there's been any update on the white-breasted ground dove in Cairns. Not sure on that. If anyone has any information, let us know. But yeah, I can't tell. Anyway, there's been quite a number of seabirds being reported inland. There was a grey ternlet in a backyard in, how do you pronounce that, Bermagui? And then there was also a white tern found in the Tarrabolga National Park. So that's interesting in and of itself. And there was another one. Where did I see that? There was a... Carla Jacket put up on Facebook. Hang on, if I open up my Facebook, it might actually be one of the first thing that comes up. Now, I've had had someone ask me this the other day, is Carla Jacket and Nigel Jacket related? And yes, Carla is Nigel's mum. Nigel I had on last week, talking about night parrots. So, just FYI for anyone who's asking the same question. Okay, so Carla reported... Oh no, never mind. Sorry. False alarm, a wedge-tailed shearwater on someone's deck. However, it was right next to the coast and apparently not unusual. So, scrap that. False alarm. So, what were we talking about? We're talking about grey terns, grey ternlets and white terns. There was, on April 1st, a whole bunch of photoshopped things, and when it first came up, so David Stowe put up a zebra finch cross I'm going to say it looks like an albatross. So we'll go with the albatross. There's a zebra finch cross albatross photo, and then there was a whole bunch of other people put Photoshop stuff up, and I was like, you're going to get in trouble. There's people on here that they don't take kindly to people who just muck around on their Facebook page. Anyway, it was April Fool's Day, which I had completely forgotten about. So, all fun and games. Everyone had their 6 hours of fun, and then we moved on. Adrian, is your Nordmans still around? What are we today? The 8th? Let's have a look. So still there on the 4th. That's the latest update. Well, Lindsay Fisher suggesting that maybe he will overwinter. Anyway, we'll see. Nordmans Greenshank was still there 4 days ago. We'll see if that gets some more updates. And then someone reported a letter-winged kite in New South Wales. And I think that there's a lot of mice around. A lot of places are going to have mice plagues this year, so that'll be fun. But that does mean that there's the potential there for letter-winged kites and other bits and pieces to come south. Maybe east. I don't know what the East Coast mouse population is doing, but come south, which would be cool. About 5 years ago, we had 4 or 5 letter-winged kites nesting about 10 minutes drive from where I live currently. So if they want to come back, that'd be fine. So anyway, letter-winged kites may be coming south. They've been sort of hanging around southwest Queensland for a while. Now, that's what's been seen around the place. That's my birding, and my apology to Paul. I think that was all that I was going to say. I would like to just give a quick shout-out to sponsors or supporters of the show. Swarovski Optic, Woods Lane. I keep calling them Woods Lane Publishing. They're not publishing. They don't publish. They just distribute. They're a bookseller. Woods Lane Booksellers. And the newest supporter of the show, Lynx. Not the deodorant company, the book publishing company. The one that have brilliant birding mammal books. They're fantastic. So yes, thank you to all of the supporters of the show. Helps things keep ticking along. If you want to buy a book or something that you hear about on the show, it would be great if you could get them through one of the supporters. I've got them on the webpage, which is thebirdersguide.com. That would be great. So without taking up too much of your time, let's get into today's conversation.
You're listening to The Birder's Guide with Michael Greenshields.
Today, we've got a bit of a different conversation in the fact that it's all about the research. So I won't go too much more into that, but not the usual birding, you know, someone who's prominent in the birding scene person, but still a very interesting conversation nonetheless. So yes, I won't talk too much more about it. I'll let you figure it out over the next half an hour or so. Let's get into it. So Isabel, welcome to The Birder's Guide. It's great to have you on the show.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Now, I do a little bit of research on guests that I have on the show, and my research this time around, which admittedly is mostly just the fact that we have zero mutual friends on Facebook and that you aren't a member of any Facebook birding groups and that your name doesn't ring any bells, leads me to believe that you're perhaps not a birder yourself. Is that correct?
I mean, I wouldn't call myself one, no. In fact, what I'm working on now is actually small mammals, but I have previously done research on birds, yeah.
So, yes, I was going to say that your next research papers, which I did have a quick look at, seem to suggest that you're just keen on nature in general. Would that be a correct assumption?
Yeah, I think my interests really lie in conservation, mm-hmm. But specifically conservation kind of in the face of climate change and ecological responses to climate change. So that's where the paper that you would have seen on the whistlers and shrike thrushes kind of comes in.
Before we get into that, I'm just interested to know a little bit about you. You're currently based in Adelaide at one of the universities in Adelaide. What are you doing there?
So I'm doing my PhD at the University of Adelaide at the moment.
Okay, yep. And the paper we're going to talk about today, you did in Victoria, Deakin University. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. So this was my honours research that I did at Deakin. So I did get to travel interstate for it though, which was great. So it was kind of done at a lot of different institutions, but I was based at Deakin.
Yep. And so are you now back home in Adelaide or did you move here to study? Where are you from originally?
Yeah, I moved over. I'm from rural Victoria and I moved over to Adelaide a couple of years ago to start my PhD. Very happy with the move. It's a really great place to live.
Yeah, nice. We might possibly touch on some of the other research you've done or are doing, just because they'll probably all tie in a little bit. But the main topic that I wanted to chat about today was the one. So you got the Chadcombe Bird Research Award, which was how I found your name. Which is on the Birds Australia webpage. They just have a list of everybody who's got all of their awards. So that I don't butcher what you were trying to research, do you want to give us a rundown on what question you were looking to answer?
Yeah, absolutely. So basically, the basis for the research, we were building off some work that had previously been done on parrots. And it all kind of centres around this concept called Allen's Rule, which essentially is like an ecographical pattern, which states that animals will have larger appendages in hotter climates as opposed to smaller appendages relative to body size in colder climates, and that corresponds to their ability to thermoregulate. So a larger appendage in a hotter environment will increase their capacity to thermoregulate through those appendages. And basically the work that had been done on the parrots was looking at trends in bill size on latitudinal gradients, but then also over time. So the research was basically looking at whether temperature increases due to climate change could have possibly caused increases in bill size in these parrots.
Oh, yeah.
So we were basically building off that and seeing if the pattern that was observed in the parrots, which was that four of the five species in that particular study actually had an increase in bill size over time. And we were just basically seeing if we could observe that in other species, other groups, because obviously there's plenty of other factors that could have influenced that bill size other than just climate change.
Yeah.
So we thought if we could pull that pattern out in other species, that might sort of add more evidence to that argument.
Yeah. So I've got three questions out of that. First of all, who is Allen? Who is that named after a researcher or did?
Yeah, so I believe his first name was Joel. Joel Allen published this paper in, I think it was 1877, basically stating this rule that, yeah, as I said, appendage size corresponding to different temperatures. And it kind of builds off another rule, which is Bergman's rule, which is more relating to body size. So where you would see larger body size in colder climates as opposed to smaller body size in warmer climates. And that's to do with like the surface area to volume ratio. But basically, yeah, it was kind of called a rule at the time, but I think research into it in more recent years has suggested that it's maybe a little bit more of a guideline than a rule. not every species kind of adheres to it, but it is generally something that can be observed, yeah.
Okay, that's interesting. So was the parrot study an Australian study?
Yes, and actually, it was an honours student who had been supervised by my supervisor. A couple of years previously, he had done this work, and then we were just kind of building off that.
Yep. And the other question I had out of that was, you talk about appendages being smaller, larger in birds and beaks. Is it just beaks that applies to?
So there's some evidence to suggest that it's also in the legs. Obviously, the bill and the legs being the kind of uncovered parts of the bird's body, that's where they're going to do most of their kind of release of heat. So, yeah, there's some evidence to suggest that it's also happening in the legs, but I think it's not quite as strong as the beak.
Yeah, yeah. How did you actually undertake your research?
Well, I just went to a whole bunch of museums and I measured about 2,500 birds. As most people know, an honours project usually goes over, it's kind of a year, but it's probably closer to 9 months. So it was just a lot of like really intense week-long trips to these museums and just, you know, measuring all of these birds. But basically we had a number of species that we were focusing on, and I would just go in and measure the bill. So we had the width, depth and length of the bill, which we then used to calculate the surface area. And I measured the length of the tarsus, so the leg, and I also measured the wing length, which we then used as kind of an indicator for body size. It was kind of across about 160 years, which is pretty much as far back as Australian collections extend anyway. So, yeah, that's what I did, and just recorded all the metadata for those birds. And, it was really awesome experience, actually, because I got to meet some really incredible people like Leo Joseph, who I'm sure you know, and as kind of a young, like bright-eyed kind of aspiring researcher, it was a pretty incredible experience.
So what you said, you were focusing on a few different species. Which ones were you looking at, and was there a reason why you chose those ones?
Yeah, so we looked at the grey shrike thrush, the little shrike thrush, the Rufous Whistler, the Golden Whistler, Gilbert's Whistler and the Grey Whistler, and then also the Olive Whistler and the Crested Shrike Tit.
Yeah.
So we were basically trying to fill a little bit of a different niche, I guess, to the parrot study. So moving over to some species that had a bit of a different life history to see if they were showing similar trends. Yeah.
And so I don't want to jump the gun too much, but what did you actually find out?
Yeah. So we pretty much, we found evidence for Allen's rule in 4 of the 8 species across like a latitudinal gradient. So 4 of the species, as you move further south, their bill size decreased. And then we also, so the parameters that we looked at latitude, which I guess was, that spatial gradient. Then we also were looking at temperature factors. So we included the summer maximum, the winter minimum, the number of days over 35 degrees per year, and the rainfall for each location of each individual. And then we also looked at some spatial factors like distance from coast for a measure of aridity and elevation.
What is aridity?
Aridity, like the degree of rainfall. So the distance from coast, I guess the greater the distance from the coast, in most cases, is going to be closer to the desert regions.
Yeah.
So those species would be experiencing a little bit of a different climate to some of the coastal species. So we were just trying to incorporate as many factors as we could that might also be explaining bill size. other than the temperature factor. So, and then we also looked at the year of collection. So that was the time factor as well. So yeah, we found Allen's rule in four of the eight species, but we didn't find any consistent increase in bill size over time. So no evidence that climate change was acting on the bill size, which is, yeah, against what the study of the parrots found. So it's obviously not a trend that's occurring in these species at least. And we didn't find really any consistent trends in the tarsus or the leg. So I guess the thing with the legs is that they may have kind of thermoregulatory capabilities, but they're also really important for so many other factors of the bird's lifestyle. So
yeah,
there's a like locomotion and that sort of thing. So there's probably a lot of confounding factors there.
Yeah. Did you find anything? Oh, no, sorry. You already said that you didn't find anything over time, which was what I was.
We didn't. Nothing consistent. We sort of had one species that had actually had been increasing, but then it wasn't really a consistent trend across the species. There were some that had been decreasing as well and some that just had no trend at all. So,
yeah
it wasn't really possible to pull out any trends from that.
Was there anything you could extrapolate between, like, the four species that sort of fit the rule and the four that didn't, or the however many didn't?
Yeah, I think one thing that was really interesting was most of the species that did show an Allen's rule trend were the most widespread. So I guess that does kind of make sense when you think about the different habitats and different climates that they would be experiencing. You're probably more likely to see trends across the range. Whereas if you've got species like the grey whistler is really only sort of found in the really northern latitudes. There's not a whole lot of scope there for that variation. So, yeah, definitely the more widespread species showed more of a trend.
And realistically, would you expect to see big changes over, what do you say, like this rule was in the 1870s, so what's that, like
100? Yeah, and we only have climate data from the last 100 years or so, really, that's high quality. So that was the climate data that we were able to use, and then over time we were looking at a period of about 160 years. I guess that's a really good question, and that's kind of what we ended up thinking at the end. Was there's kind of a few different possibilities. There's first of all possibly the warming that these birds would have experienced, which I think the last state of the climate report was something like 1.4 degrees over the last 100 years in Australia. So whether that is something that is too small to be triggering an evolutionary response.
Yeah.
Or on the other side of that, is it actually happening too fast for the species to respond? So I guess that's the kind of thing that we don't still understand about how species are going to respond to climate change, and yeah, how extreme those triggers need to be. So yeah, it's really interesting, and I think the thing is, I guess everyone always says this, but we just need more research to know what these temperature increases mean.
So how did your results differ from the study that was done on parrots?
Well, we didn't find the Allen's rule trend. And I guess that, Allen's rule trend over time, like in response to climate change. So even though we'd followed the same protocols, so the same measurements and that sort of thing, we didn't get the same results. So I guess that suggests that, as we said, either the temperature increases were either too small or too great to trigger a response, or alternatively, these species could be finding different ways to cope with those temperature increases. So that could be behavioural, other kind of like physiological responses to heat stress. So Yeah, they could just be responding in different ways.
I'm just going to guess that their study showed that all of the parrots or the vast majority did follow Allen's rule.
Yeah, so in terms of a climate change response, it was 4 out of the 5 species, yeah.
Okay.
Which is,
do you know what species they looked at by any chance?
Not off the top of my head, but I reckon I could pull up the paper pretty quickly. So they looked at mulga parrots, gangang cockatoos, red-rumped parrots, and male crimson rosellas.
Okay.
And then I think there must have been another species because I think those were the ones that they found increases in bill surface area. But, yeah, those were the ones that had shown. So they found a 4 to 10% increase in bill surface area since 1871.
So if you had a, as you say, 4 to 10% increase, what's the temperature increase? Is that the 1.4?
At the time that they did the study, I think the temperature increase would have been slightly less. I think it's probably closer to 1 degree of warming. Mm-hmm. But that's a slow process over time, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really interesting. I think, again, we don't really know what triggers will cause a selective response. And that was why we wanted to kind of expand the study into other species. But again, there's just so many different factors that you have to consider. And then when you think about how it's not just temperature that's been affected by climate change, it's also things like rainfall, extreme weather events, that sort of thing. And then that has flow-on effects to the habitat that these animals are living in. So there's just so many factors that could be influencing either those morphology factors, so yeah, the bill size, but also yeah, behavioral changes, or even range shifts as well, because I think that's something that we're seeing a lot of species doing in response to climate change, is literally just packing up and moving on, and a lot to consider.
Mm. Were you able to rule out other causes or other potential causes?
That was why we tried to factor in some of the other spatial environmental elements, so factoring in elevation and rainfall, distance from coast, those sorts of things. So we couldn't rule them out, but we could include them in the models so that, if one of those factors was influencing the bill size more strongly than, say, temperature or latitude, then those models would pull them out.
So did you find anything interesting that you weren't expecting to find during your
study? Yes. I was hoping you were going to ask me this because there is one thing that really just amazed me. So one of the species, which was the grey shrike thrush, which is one of the most widespread species that we looked at, it was one that really neatly fit the Allen's rule trend in terms of the latitude.
Mm-hmm.
So as you move further south, you get this very neat kind of decrease in bill surface area as you're moving further south.
Yep.
But what was really interesting was, because I also measured individuals from Tasmania, and that if you looked at the graph of the bill surface area, it's like nice steep decline, and then you just get this massive uptick once you get to those really far south latitudes of the space of the individuals that were in Tasmania. So I was like, what the hell is going on? they've got these massive bills, which completely goes against Allen's rule, obviously. And not only that, but you have Allen's rule on the mainland and then just something completely different happening on the island. So I just did a deep dive into the literature and tried to find some reason that this could be happening, and I think probably the cause of that is that Tasmania itself doesn't really have any true creepers, so bird species that feed exclusively on the trunks of trees. So the grey shrike thrush was has been observed to be feeding on the trunks of trees in Tasmania, but not exclusively. So it could be kind of filling that niche that's not taken up by any other creepers, and that's why they've developed larger bills, because you need like a big, robust, strong bill to be feeding on the trunks of trees. So yeah, I think that was the thing that I found really, really fascinating, and again was completely outside of the realm of what we were looking at. But what's also interesting about it is it kind of goes to show how, yes, you can have these neat little rules like Allen's rule and Bergman's rule that in some cases might fit really well, but then temperature isn't the only thing that influences appendage size, and other life history factors can really influence them as well. So that was really fascinating.
Interesting. It's amazing. Maybe someone else can do some research paper on that in the future.
I think it would be awesome to look at, because I don't think anyone's done any like really targeted studies on that, but I think it's fascinating, and it's amazing the kind of things that will happen on islands. Even a big island like Tasmania, you get these kind of island effects that are really, really fascinating.
Yeah. I want to take your answer to this next question and not segue, but use it to ask what else you're researching and if it applies there as well. So if you could sum up in like one or two sentences what your findings of this whole paper was. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So basically we found evidence for an Allen's rule trend in 4 of the 8 species in terms of latitude. So a spatial trend towards smaller bill sizes in cooler climates. But what we didn't find was any similar response triggered by climate change and increasing temperatures in the last 100, 150 years. So I guess what that tells us is that, we still don't understand how climate change is triggering responses in these species, and that it's not always as simple as just one response. So that was basically our findings, is that we need to do more research, which is often the case, I think. But it was, it was good to kind of build off that research that had been done on the parrots previously, just to show that one size doesn't fit all, and that, something might be happening in some taxa but not in others. Just shows how much research is needed into climate change responses, I think.
Yeah. And so taking that, a question that has come out of your answer then, is Allen's rule specifically avian based?
Absolutely not. So it's, I think probably the most commonly used example is actually like in rabbits and hares.
Okay.
So, if you look at, hares on the American continent, you've got different species of hares across a really massive spatial gradient experiencing a whole lot of different climates. The hares that are living in the really northern regions experiencing like really low temperatures have quite short, stubby ears, as opposed to the hares that are living in a more warm climate and more southern kind of reaches, mm-hmm. Have really, really big ears. So plenty of other desert dwelling mammals like fennec foxes, for example, have like massive ears in proportion to their body size. So definitely something that's observed in mammals as well as birds. It's pretty fascinating. And actually there are some species of birds that studies have suggest they can actually control how much blood flow they get in their beak, so that they can actually dump heat out into the environment through their beak, which is pretty incredible.
Yeah, sweet. So your current, I don't actually know what you're currently working on. I didn't dive in that much, but does your current research align at all with what you found out here, or is it just a completely different set of
It's a little bit of a sharp left turn, I guess. Mm-hmm. But one aspect of my PhD is looking at kind of spatial changes in morphology in the species that I'm studying, which is, yeah, like I mentioned to you, it's a small mammal, but a South Australian native, which is quite cool. I don't know if you've ever heard of the greater stick nest rat.
Yeah, definitely the stick nest rats. Yep.
Yeah. So, that's the species that I'm working on at the moment. And looking at a whole lot of different aspects of the ecology of the species in kind of a future management under the climate change context. And then hoping that the results that we do get from this study will be something that can be extrapolated to other species with similar life history, or particularly like in Australia, we've had so many species that have suffered range contractions, and the stick nest rat's one of them. So just working out how we can be managing those species and kind of trying to bring their numbers up at the same time as dealing with the threats of climate change as well. So, yeah, hoping that we can broaden those results to other species in the long run.
Yeah. How long have you got left on your PhD?
Well, I'm just coming to my 30 now, so hopefully maybe 12, 18 months.
Okay.
That's kind of the best case scenario. everyone that's studying at the moment, or anyone that's doing anything, knows that, you know, COVID threw a spanner in the works, but I think I was pretty lucky. I wasn't too badly affected. But yeah, it has caused a few delays, but otherwise hopefully should be looking at submitting sort of early to mid next year.
Yeah, nice. Last question. Where is the greatest stick nest rats range?
So they used to be all the way across kind of the southern half of Australia, going kind of halfway into Victoria, New South Wales, and all the way across to like Shark Bay in Western Australia.
Mm-hmm.
They were then completely extinct on the mainland by the 1930s. So a combination of like feral predators, land clearing, grazing by cattle, just completely wiped them out. And then there was just one population left on the Franklin Islands, which is just off the coast of Ceduna.
Mm-hmm.
So that population has been the source of multiple kind of translocations to try and get the population going, get some insurance populations. So they're now existing on the Franklin Islands, Revesby and St. Peter's Islands. And then there's also there's some at Monarto Zoo, like a breeding colony. There's a couple at Adelaide Zoo, actually, so you can go in and see them. They're very, very, very cute. And then there's a colony at, I think, Mount Gibson. There's one at Salutation Island. There's one that's actually just been started at Mallee Cliffs. And then there's one at Arid Recovery Reserve, which is just outside of Roxby Downs.
Yeah.
In the desert. So, yeah, there's a few populations set up now. But really serious range contraction. And, part of my research is looking at actually what that diversity, mainland diversity, would have looked like before they went extinct on the mainland. And we don't really know, because it happened before anyone was really taking any serious notice of them. So that's, I think, what I learned from this research on the shrike, thrushes and whistlers, is actually how valuable museum collections and natural history collections is for anything like conservation minded. It's really important to understand the past, particularly in Australia when we've had so much loss of biodiversity. So they're really, really valuable resources. And I think for a species like the stick nest rat, where just there was so much loss before we could even study them in their kind of natural range. Those collections are really fantastic to be able to use.
So I do have one more question, even though I'd said previously that was my last one. You said you went to a lot of museums and measured a lot of birds. Which museum is the best one?
That's a very controversial question. Well, I wouldn't actually, now that I do a lot of work out of the South Australian Museum, like I just am always blown away by not just their collections, but the people that work in their collections and just the passion and yeah, they're just really incredible people. There's so much good work going on there. So I'm probably a little bit biased. I also got to go to the CSIRO collections in Canberra. And that is a really amazing collection because it's purely wildlife there. So, and it's not a museum in the traditional sense of, you know, having some of the items on display. It really is just a research collection, and there's just so much there. So yeah, that was pretty awesome as well. But they're all incredible. All the museums are great and such good resources, as I've said. So
nice. A very diplomatic answer. Well done.
Thank you. trying not to step on any toes, you know.
Yeah, that's right. You don't want that to backfire on you.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for giving us half an hour or so of your time and talking about your research that you've done, and to Jade and Miles, who I know, I think they're the only two listeners that I know of that are about 15. If you're looking at getting into research, there's some ideas of what to do. But yes, thanks Isabel for coming on and sharing with us, and all the best with your future research.
Thank you so much. Thanks.
So thanks everybody for listening. Hope you found that interesting. And to anyone who is thinking about getting into ecology, zoology, biology, ornithology, get onto it. Sometimes I wish that I had picked a path like that earlier in my life, but I was not the studious. I was not the student type. So probably wouldn't have worked. But anyway, that's about it. So tune in a fortnight's time. There might be a podcast coming out before then. I'm chatting to someone who's doing some bird research in Norway. So I'm hoping to get her on the show. So that might be released earlier than a fortnight's time. But anyway, regardless, if you come back in a fortnight's time, there'll be someone else on the show and we will chat more about birding. So until then, happy birding.